ora, and welcome back to System Fix, a podcast from the health media. My name is Barbara Fountain, and I am editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. Each episode of System Fix, we take a look at progress with reforms proposed for the New Zealand health system. These arose from the report of the Health and Disability System Review Panel, aka the Simpson Report. However, they have been significantly revved up by Health Minister Andrew Little to become what I like to call the Big Little Revolution. On System Fix, I speak with regular panellists and invited guests about the changes, the highs, the lows, what's happened to date, and what we might expect. Thanks for joining me. Kia ora, and welcome to System Fix episode 12. Where are we? Now, I was thinking to call this episode, Are We There Yet? But we all know health reform is a long journey. Still, to date, this has been a bit like the road from Christchurch to Ashburton. The occasional braided river for distraction, holding your breath across the bridges, and then more paddocks. Not a lot that we can see is happening with health reform, but we know a lot is going on at the Health and Disability Review Transition Unit. With me today are regular panellists, independent health policy consultant Gabrielle Baker and Auckland University health policy researcher Tim Tembetzel. Welcome.
Kia ora.
Kia ora, Barbara. Kia ora, Gabrielle.
Let's start with a recap on recent developments. Last time we got together, a budget had just been released and the steering groups were appointed for the Māori Health Authority and Health NZ. There's been a call out for prototypes to test locality models. There was quite a lot of enthusiasm about localities at the Rural Health Conference. The Transition Unit has provided a list of who they've been meeting with since late November, mindful there is plenty more consultation and engagement to take place. Some of that will be a roadshow to look at developing a legislated charter of the values people working in the health system should aspire to. From the public point of view, maybe not a lot going on, but behind the scenes, it's obviously rocking. So, localities, charter, list, engagement. Where shall we start? It's not a rhetorical question. Where shall we start? I mean, I do feel a little bit like I know stuff is happening, but I'm actually finding it quite difficult to pin it down. And then it was really great. We requested this list of people that they've been meeting with. And it was interesting to see it goes back to November. And got the list knowing that they're going to be meeting with more people. But there's quite a wide variety of names and organisations on this list. What are your thoughts on their engagement to date?
I'll let you go, Gabrielle.
All right. I didn't really know what to draw from that list because it's hard to know what an engagement means. On one level, I looked at it. I did my quick kind of analysis to see are Māori being engaged with, and on some level, the answer is yes. What that means, I don't know. But there are quite a few Māori groups on the list of engagement, including iwi partnership boards, which I thought I was completely expected given that they're one of the groups that kind of survive all of these changes. The other thing I looked for was to see, I guess the kind of conventional or the historic thing that might have happened is an overrepresentation of the medical workforce in that list of engagees. And I didn't really see that. I saw quite a few medical groups, but I also saw nursing groups and provider groups and other groups too. So like pharmacists, so other health professional groups. So on one level, I was kind of surprised that there was quite a good mix, but you don't get a sense of what were those engagements and which ones of those are true quality and having a two-way conversation. Like one of them, I looked up and it was a training provider. And so I think, well, was that a pitch meeting or was that a discussion about what the training needs are going forward that there are lots of people are having? That's my take on it. It looked kind of okay, but it's really hard to tell what it means.
What about you, Tim? What did you think?
Yeah, well, it's such a long list. A list like that can never tell you about the quality of consultation. I'm not sure what can. I guess that it'll be a few years, I think, before we really know whose voices were really being listened to and who was pushing at the door.
At the National Rural Health Conference, I had the opportunity to interview Martin Hefford, and that interview was on episode number 10. And I mean, that was actually a really useful interview, I felt. And his presentation at the conference was useful on localities. But then I went to another presentation from Shane Hunter, Deputy Director General, a couple of weeks ago. It was an after work function. It's about 200 people there from the health IT area. And there was obviously a lot of interest, but I found the presentation pretty light on detail. And I suppose at this stage, a lot of stuff is light on detail. But we have been consulting since November, and I felt that the crowd probably were looking for more detail. And it really was more of a, hey, get on board. We really want you involved with this. So I thought they were two quite contrasting pieces of engagement. Yeah, Gabrielle, in previous podcasts, you've actually raised the issue of how engagement takes place. And you did write with this list that we don't really know about the quality of the engagement. And also, I'd be really interested to know a bit more about what they're collecting, how they're actually collecting detail and data, and what value they give to different engagement. In your experience, Tim, in terms of health policy, and you've looked at a lot of strategies in the past, what tips would you be giving the transition unit people engaging with such a broad range of groups?
Well, you know, I think in a world without constraints, we'd want really wide consultation and really quick action. You know, there's a big trade-off between the two. So the wider the net consultation, the slower things will be. On the other hand, if things speed up, then that would lead us to start to think, well, the bandwidth of who's being talked to will start to narrow. Too hard to tell at this stage which of those two directions, or whether it'll be somewhere in the middle.
Mm. Gabrielle, there's a hui which has been taking place around the country, and they have had, I think it is the Deputy Director General Māori Health, John Whanga, being involved with those. The engagement with Māori is crucial in this whole reform. Yeah. It is so central to what we're doing. And again, I suppose it is really too early to say how effective, or from this list, we can't really gauge the quality.
I did pick up on those hui whakaoranga meetings that are on the list. And I understood those were Ministry of Health run meetings. And so this did make me think, is that really an engagement from the transition unit, or is that a Ministry of Health meeting that some transition unit people attended? And it is just that question of what do these actually mean?
Mm.
It's a really helpful starting point. I enjoyed looking at the list.
Yeah.
But it just raises more questions, really.
Yeah. So the minister has talked in the past about the promise of kind of very widespread community engagement. That's going to have to take some form. I know with the reforms back in the 1990s that we had Sharon Crosby out there doing town hall meetings around the core services. And now the roadshow proposed for the charter. So the charter is another interesting area to look at. I went back and checked on where it's come from, and the charter wasn't raised in the interim report from the Simpson group. There was a list of 7 themes that were suggested, and it was in the final report that they suggested a health charter and that it should be legislated for, and that possibly people who contract to the health sector should be required to hold to those values. And then when Andrew Little came out with his cabinet paper, he strengthened the idea of the legislated health charter as being pretty crucial.
Excuse me, folks. I'm just going to interrupt here to give a little more detail about Mr. Little's expectations of the health charter. In the cabinet paper, the Health and Disability System Review, Proposals for Reform, clause 167 reads, I recommend that an early part of this work should be to develop a New Zealand Health Charter as proposed by the review. The concept of a New Zealand Health Charter provides a major opportunity to engage health and care workers as part of, quote, one system, end of quote, and to secure their place in the reforms. The charter will articulate shared values, standards, expectations, and ways of working to act as a common foundation across disciplines and locations that captures the core motivations of the workforce. It would aim to ensure cross-disciplinary teams can deliver quality care together and improve mobility and collaboration between professions. It should become a central element of how the future system sees itself and the underlying principles of those who work in it. Clause 168 has been redacted, but might possibly refer to whether the charter will stretch to those contracted to the system, but I cannot be sure.
That's a pretty interesting area. I mean, in any company, I suppose any business, when you start talking about mission statements and values, a lot of people kind of eyes
glaze over.
And we're looking at a roadshow that's going to go out to the entire health workforce and community. I mean, it's so important, but some people might be thinking it's not the most important thing at the moment.
Again, it's too early to tell what that road will lead to, but I think it can be a useful exercise for clarification and getting the areas of consensus. And there are clearly quite a few areas of consensus. I think we've known for some time that people are using the same terminology, the same buzzwords and the same, you know, kind of broad objectives of what a health system do. The issue is really that they mean different things to people. So I wonder whether another way of coming at this would be to say, okay, well, what things don't we? I think the danger with this sort of exercise is you get motherhood and apple pie state, and then everybody moves on. And I think, you know, the refresh of the New Zealand health strategy was a classic example. You know, it's so broad that what the hell does it mean?
What does it mean? Yeah. Because when I think about this widespread community consultation, I kind of think, when? When are you going to do it? The legislation is supposed to be introduced in September. So when is there going to be a widespread discussion? And what is the quality of that discussion if all the decisions have already been made? And I think practically, you're right, Tim, that it's easier to say, well, what points do we disagree on? My concern in any of those kind of widespread consultations is that, well, will the Māori voice or a equity voice or an anti-racist voice be kind of silenced by other considerations that are very practical or there are more numerous, there's more numbers behind, I guess. So when I think about that charter stuff, I think, oh, well, good, have a discussion, but when and what's going to be the quality of that discussion and what will it actually teach us that we didn't already know? Like, I absolutely think that there's a very big risk in all of this around, and it's when I talk about the devil being in the details, it's about the non-performativity. So if stating equity is important is something we've been doing for 20 plus years and we've not been able to deliver on that. And is this just going to be more ways to say that equity is important, but no fundamental change behind that in the way we work?
I mean, one country that has something that might look a bit like what they're talking about is Canada, and they have the Canada Health Act and the five principles of the Canada Health Act. I mean, they can be quite useful for being a defence against things like, you know, in Canada, you know, some privatisation of some sort of services or funding. So, you know, these things can have their uses, but they're pretty, yeah, how much effort should go into doing this? It would be my, how much bandwidth?
Any other thoughts on that at this stage?
When I think about the charter as well, I have a thought that applies to all of the work that's happening, which is if Te Tiriti or Waitangi is truly a central part of all of this reform, I would expect to see more discussion about it and the discussion of all of the details along the way. So the charter is one area, but I also think about it in the context of the localities discussions and local networks. I don't hear discussion about the treaty elements except to extent that there's reference to the Māori Health Authority. Like, one of the things that, you know, that is important to me is what is this role of this either iwi partnership board or whatever they end up being called in the system. And the information I've seen, so I didn't get to go to the rural conference, but I saw the write-up in NZ Dog and I saw the slides that were shared. And in there, I couldn't see that this allegedly fundamental part of the system, these iwi partnership boards, I couldn't see them in the information provided. So I think it just raises my spidey senses about whether these are being taken seriously as a fundamental part or if they're another manifestation of lip service.
Interesting at the Rural Conference, because most of the people I spoke to, and including AEW providers, were quite excited about the localities. And that may be as much about people taking notice of the possibilities for body health as it was for rural health. So it was actually, given the complexity of the locality concept, and maybe it's easier for rural people to grasp that concept because they are so used to a locality. But in that case, they're talking about geographical localities, and a lot of their regions are far too small to support a locality. So, but generally, it was quite positive. But the further on I've got from the rural conference, the more I've been listening to other people talking, I do feel like the localities are going to be the thing that's in the hard basket. And as you say, for iwi providers, the resource at that level is going to be really critical.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to learn from the mistakes of the primary healthcare strategy rollout, eh? And underinvestment in Māori providers, not recognising historical underinvestment as well. So
overall, I mean, just at the moment, are you guys kind of tapped into any particular areas with regard to the reform that I haven't mentioned already?
The one I'm keeping my BDI on is the one about what will the performance framework look like. There's no news there at this point, but there are some connections in some of the material that we've been looking over in the last 24 hours or that's come through New Zealand Doctor. And I think the thing that caught my eye most, again, was about localities and Martin Heppard's slideshow. I thought there were some very interesting features of that and you know, a lot of interesting questions to come out of it. So there was this definite attempt to make it not look like a top-down sort of structure. In the slide, the providers were at the top and the locality commissioning groups were at the bottom of the slide. But you still got to sort of ask the question of what sort of relationships will be there. So we've got these, not sure how many listeners are kind of, you know, worrying or sweating too much about the detail at this stage because it could change. But, you know, you've got the locality commissioning teams, which is kind of the DHB planning and funding units in drag at the moment, I think. You know, at least that's what they will start out as, and then the scale may change and maybe, you know, bigger or smaller as things develop. My read of it is they will each be responsible for anywhere between 1 and 10 localities. And those localities and what they look like are likely to vary significantly, and who's going to sort of facilitate them and coordinate them. So the key question will be, what will the relationships be like between these locality commissioning teams and the localities, whatever, local commissioning teams? Keep getting my terminology. But I suspect that terminology will change.
I was just about to say, I can guarantee it will change. There's no point learning it.
Exactly.
I get a little bit of a feeling that some of the DHBs, and this is probably a bit mean-spirited, but some of them are just starting to get a few things done and spend a bit of money that they might have spent maybe a little while ago. And I kind of wonder if, you know, there's a bit of a rush on before the 1st of July, put in place a few things that they've been promising to do for a while. And I imagine I should probably give an example, but one doesn't come off the top of my head. But we get media releases coming through and I think, oh, that's interesting. It's good they're finally doing that.
Well, you know what I think's behind that?
Spending their money before the deficits get written off?
Yes, more or less.
I'm glad I'm not the only person thinking like that. Another issue that was raised at the health IT meeting was the shortage of health IT professionals. And I suppose we've focused a lot on shortages in the clinical workforce, but this rollout, these reforms rely very heavily on a digital health approach, improve access to rural communities and disadvantaged communities, much more use of telemedicine. The idea that we actually have a shortage of the people who can actually make that happen is of concern.
I'll be telling my students that.
Yes, well, apparently there's less people at university in tech degrees, which I was quite surprised by.
Surprised by that too when I saw it in that write-up. I guess I was probably quite pleased to see a discussion about something other than just more doctors. Because let me rewind a little bit. The rhetoric around it is this once-in-a-generation change. And a once-in-a-generation change to me is not just getting more of what we've already done.
Absolutely. Well, there's lots of...
I know that IT is the only answer, just to be clear, but like, it was positive that there's a discussion about something other than just getting more GPs. Mm. You know, not that that's a bad thing, but it's certainly not the only thing we should be concerned with.
Personally, I just feel a little bit flat by the lack of general discussion or access to details about what's happening. And I suppose part of that makes me worry that they're not as sure about, not so much where they're heading, because of course there is a lot of consultation. As you say, we don't want it all to be pre-decided. But if you are confident about what you're doing, you might want to share a bit more. Maybe this is more because it's being run by the Prime Minister's department, that there's a lot more political caution around being open about what you're working on.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think that there's a lot of back and forth on some sort of details and realise actually that we'll have to make a decision. Do we go this way or do we go that way? And the pros and cons of each side of it being thrashed through. You know, there'll be so many sort of issues like that, you know, such as, you know, how do you set up the relationship between the locality, the local commissioning teams, and do providers have the ability to opt in or opt out or something like that to these networks? Who controls the composition of the networks? A whole lot of things like that will be fairly crucial decisions. And, you know, there are a lot of talking and a lot of internal debate about those things because they haven't got to that level of detail before.
I expect, Tim, you would be able to articulate this much better. But one of the things that has been kind of playing on my mind is whether or not there is the right policy capability in the transition unit. So when I hear about people being appointed or going in there to work, and there was some amazing Pacifica medical professionals going in to work in there, like that's really positive. Those are people I want to be giving their ideas. But whereas it still leaves me the question of where's the policy capability, bringing in people who have worked in the health system and have views on it is really good. But what about the kind of questions that Tim was raising, the questions that I think about around the Māori Health Authority as a constitutional set of questions, their kind of core policy issues, and the names that we get are people who are really good at, who have proven themselves as managing projects or specific parts of the health sector, not necessarily the policy stuff. And I do kind of wonder if it's right that this fundamental once-in-a-generation change is determined through a set of pilots. It's kind of, you know, becomes described as a set of projects?
Such a good question.
Since you've mentioned them, I thought I'd just give our listeners the names of the people who have just been appointed to the Pacific Health team within the Transition Unit. Api Talamatonga, Debbie Ryan, Colin Tukitonga, and Corina Gray. Actually, Colin and Corina were already working in the unit, so it's Api and Debbie who have just been appointed as well. I must say, I find it a little unnerving that quite a few people that we contact on a regular basis and chat, you know, through New Zealand Doctor, they start getting appointed to positions where they can no longer comment.
Barbara, are you going to sort of bar Gabrielle and I from doing that?
I must say, it does worry me. I've always said in the past the best way for the ministry to silence someone is to employ them.
Yeah. I think that the sort of what the capability is there is interesting because a few people have been around a long time, who we talked about before, and they're sort of doing the high level. And then there's people that are coming in to do the grunt work or the, you know, flesh out the details. They may be the ones that don't have as long or as, you know, experience in the sector. They may be bright young things, which we want some of, but they will probably encounter issues that have been encountered before, but they may not know. So we may get good thinkers. You know, it does sound like there's a bit of breadth of expertise or range of expertise, but it's sort of how it all fits together will be the tricky thing to manage. And also the relationships within government have a say. You've health, got treasury, you've got other government departments. So just within government, the cacophony of voices is probably going to be quite.
On that, I wanted, that kind of brings us back to the first discussion, because one of the things I was surprised about in that list of people or groups engaged with were the number of government departments or government agencies on that list, which I guess it's surprising to me that they're counted in the same way as the sector. So I think that I also would be surprised if, because Department of Internal Affairs is there, pretty, you know, big government department. So surely that's not the only way that government departments have been engaged, like Health Quality and Safety Commission as well. It seems a bit odd to me, some of those.
Well, it seems timely that we've come back to where we started with the list. And it's now time for the system fix quiz.
The quiz. Okay, I'm ready.
I dread the quiz.
Well, actually, I struggled with the quiz this time. And as we kind of ambled through this episode, there's not a lot to totally pin down. So we've got, only got two questions today. First question, how many people work in the transition unit?
Wow.
The listeners, we've got two blank stares.
Yeah. Well, you've got two thoughtful people, Mel. Because
I'm
going to
claim definitional issues. Like, what does it mean to work in the unit?
Yeah. I'm thinking, let's put a really precise number so I sound like I know what I'm talking about, and I don't really. I'm going to say 165.
Goodness me.
I'm going to say 45.
Okay, well, the number I've got is 37 full-time equivalents here, I'd say. And that information came from a newsroom article. They received that through the Official Information Act. By mid-March, the unit's core staff had risen to 37, 27 of whom were contractors or consultants.
Yeah.
15 of those were from EY, or 10.7 full-time equivalent positions.
I like Everest.
So 100.
If it's the closest, I get that one. That's
yes,
one.
I think so.
Yeah,
and if it was 100, if it was 100, was it 135 you suggested, Tim?
165, I think.
165.
No, way out.
In which case, both of you would probably definitely be employed by the transition unit by now.
At that point, it would be offensive.
Yeah.
Okay, so how many days since the release of the Simpson Report?
Oh, okay. That is about a year and a month, 13 months.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty
close.
Given
that you got the last point, Gabrielle. You know.
Yeah. 401 days. It was the 16th of June, 2020.
I was about to tell you it was the 16th, but I thought it was of July.
I'm very impressed by that. So that 16th of June, so 400 days.
The thing that I remember most about that announcement was that it was totally drowned by a couple of people getting lost on the Green Lane roundabout.
That's right. I remember that too.
Coming out of quarantine. Supposed to be in quarantine.
Yeah.
So, you know, it meant that the whole report in terms of the public eye was kind of, you know, the response to it was totally buried. Turned out to be a good thing.
Well, when you think about it, the minister's changes have made it significantly different. I mean, that huge change with the Māori Health Authority was really significant.
Mm.
So thank you, guys. Probably be another month or so before we get together. Maybe we'll have news.
We might have some appointments.
That's 1st of September they get announced.
Okay.
We might have the roadshow started for the charter.
Yeah.
PHOs are busy putting in information regarding what they actually do. with regard to primary care. So there may be some news on prototypes. Just watch this space.
Right.
Okay, guys, well, thank you so much. Another episode, episode 12.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you, Barbara.
Now, about that list. If you would like to read the list of organisations the Health and Disability System Review Transition Unit has engaged with, you can check it out in the free access section on nzdoctor.co.nz. Simply search in Google for Transition Unit Dance Card, nzdoctor.co.nz, or if you subscribe to New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa, you'll find the list in the document archive on nzdoctor.co.nz. Happy reading. Thanks for listening to System Fix, brought to you by the Health Media. If you want to learn more about changes to the health system and at the same time support independent, quality journalism in New Zealand, please consider subscribing to one of our publications. New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa provides news and education for general practice, primary care and beyond. Pharmacy Today focuses on news and education for the pharmacy sector and includes an awesome new education feature called Class. You can find out more about these publications by going to thehealthmedia.co.nz. It's never been more important to stay up to date with the changes taking place in our health system. Share System Fix with your friends. They can find us wherever they usually subscribe to podcasts. Nga mihi nui, catch you next time.